Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today I'm happy to have as my guest Veronica Gonzalez. It's one of our fairly rare first novels. She's written a novel called Twin Time, or How Death Befell Me, which is published by Semiotext Press. And I found it fascinating because, in a certain way, it's a novel that almost can't be written. I'll tell you why. The heroine's name is Mona. She grows up in Mount Washington, Los Angeles, believing that the man who is raising her is her father, that her mother died in childbirth, and she does not know that the man raising her is not her father, that her mother did not die, and that when she left, she took a twin brother with her. And so this is a character who knows nothing about the factual nature of her existence. And in fact, the reader knows more than she does. Now, this seems to be a book that becomes, therefore, very hard to narrate. Tell me about how you did it.
Well, I began the book. I wrote the middle section of the book first, which once you read the book seems kind of crazy, because I felt that I needed to give Mona this background, which was her mother, and as I wrote, as I was writing Mona, I wasn't quite sure what that background was myself, her mother's background, what was going to be the impetus for this quest. But I love the idea of ambiguity in fiction. I love the idea of non-closure, of openness. I think that the fact that there wasn't a piercingly direct point of view from the beginning allowed me a lot of room to play with Mona and with what happens in the novel. And I wanted it to be a playful book, even though so many of the themes are so serious. It was difficult to write, Michael, and I had to do a lot of revising, and I had to go back to the book over and over again to make things make sense.
Well, I arrived at a point in the novel where it reveals its method. This is a little section from Twin Time, or How Death Befell Me, by my guest Veronica Gonzalez. Maybe there are lots of different ways to know the world, your place in it. Maybe the stories and dreams and make-believe help us with our facts. Maybe we all move between these different ways of knowing every day, constantly, within the measure of an instant sometimes, from dream to metaphor to myth to story and verifiable fact and all the other tools which we can muster to help us stay alive. So it seemed to me that this book was using life tools which happened to be fiction tools as well, mm-hmm. myth, storytelling, invention, seeking truth, as a constant way of understanding that truth is not a straight line.
Right. I don't believe that truth is a straight line. And I also have my questions about truth itself in general. The idea of truth with a capital T, or beauty with a capital B, the idea of these abstractions which can take over people's lives, that's something that I kind of work against in my fiction. And it's something, I think that the ideas that drive my fiction are very closely related to my philosophy of life. And I came to this kind of slowly. But I realized that the people who I love to read and the art that I love to look at is a very decentered art. It's not straight narrative. I'm not interested in realism, in making realism myself. I find that a lot of it is great to read, but it's not what I'm interested in making. I'm interested much more in a diffuse narrative and in other people who do that kind of work. Virginia Woolf, Gertrude Stein, even someone like Jane Bowles, who is often, you know, seen as a realist, but is so hilarious and everything falls apart for her in such remarkable ways that that's much more the line that I'm interested in.
Almost immediately, we're dealt a kind of shocking situation.
Right.
A mother who is whoring out her daughter.
Right.
Or at least seems to be.
Right.
And this daughter is going to immediately give rise to a fantasy that the father of her consequent child is a man that she has barely done more than holding hands with.
Mm-hmm.
So we're entering the space of this novel in which invention
mm-hmm.
and displacement
mm-hmm.
become autobiography. And so when we meet Mona, her search is complicated not only by the fact that the people she needs to talk to are no longer alive,
mm-hmm.
but by the fact that they've invented
mm-hmm.
most of the events, traumatic or not,
mm-hmm.
of their lives.
Right. And I guess it's a really extreme version if we see Mona's story as a quest, as the quest for self, you know, the ultimate story of finding yourself, which it's an extreme version of that, but I think that to some extent it's a story that we all go through, and because I'm a fiction writer and I love extremities, I do create this really large story which takes on so many of the issues that I think that anyone who has a deep involvement with their selfness goes through, you know, facing the stories that have been presented to you and making them your own and finding the places where things make sense and where they don't make sense and where the places where you have to break away and create your own story.
Now, one of the themes here that seems to link up with a personal theme is the theme of identity. The book takes place at its beginning in Mexico City.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain point at which Mona has mistaken a fantasy figure for a Japanese woman, and the woman says, "No, I'm Chinese."
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
"My name is Lily."
Mm-hmm.
"I am not your friend, Miniko." And Mona says, "Oh, yes, I know exactly what you mean. People assume I'm Mexican."
Mm-hmm.
And Lily says to her, "Well, where are you from?" And she says, "Mexico City."
Mm-hmm.
And she says, "My parents are Mexican."
Mm-hmm.
And so that question of what is the identity? Now, I know that Rodolfo Anaya
mm-hmm.
chose one of your early stories
mm-hmm.
as an award for Latina fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that in relation to the desire to be and not be Mexican?
I went to school in the early 90s, and it was really I went to NYU for writing school, and it was really a kind of the height of the identity novel and the ethnic identity novel. And I think that there are some wonderful books that have come out of that vein of writing. But I don't I didn't want my book to be easily categorized. I found that when I started trying to publish, I had a really hard time because people expected a certain kind of story from me, and only that kind of story was acceptable because I was Mexican. And I really felt, because my writing is experimental, it plays a lot with philosophical ideas, that there was this sense that I couldn't be an intellectual experimental writer and a Mexican at the same time in the larger publishing world. And so I found ways to continue doing what I was doing, the kind of work that I wanted to do in quieter ways. I ran a zine. I started a little publishing company. My friend Laura, who is a Filipino-American writer, and I published this anthology with Soft Skull. And I've found these ways to continue to do the work that I feel I want to do without having my Mexicanness be categorized or myself be categorizable because of my Mexicanness. For my characters, for Mona, I think that there is a confusion for her about who she is and that's part of the search that she's involved in. Yeah.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Veronica Gonzalez, author, most recently, of Twin Time, or How Death Befell Me, published by Semiotext. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Veronica Gonzalez about her novel, Twin Time. Now, what I found interesting was that as opposed to an identity novel, mm-hmm. this is a search for identity novel, mm-hmm. and formally, mm-hmm. it's a search for the search for identity novel. Mm-hmm. The character describes herself as having spent her life going around in circles, mm-hmm. and the writer finds a way of building circle inside circle mm-hmm. for this character to live in. And it seems to me that in the best fiction, mm-hmm. experimental or, what is the word, conventional, mm-hmm. Form and content become allied with one another, and that this circularity is the identity of the novel, mm-hmm. and that it's about breaking the circle as well.
Mm-hmm. First off, I you know, it's so important to me that you mentioned the idea that form and content in good writing is always allied. I truly believe that. I believe that anything that I do in my novel formally is closely linked to the story. I love story, and the places where I break story down are for me a wink between myself and the reader, because I feel that the relationship for me is always between me and the reader first and my characters second. I love circular narratives. That circular narratives, doubling, all of these places where things kind of meld into each other. Those are places of sheer joy for me when I read other work.
Often, the things that are important to us have been important all along, and then we'd find them turning up right. again and again and again. So I was very surprised to find in the introduction to the anthology you mm-hmm. did talk about that space, probably the space you're talking about between author and reader in which a novel takes place, right. as being the place that you say the psychologist Winnicott right. talks about as being not outside and not inside, right. that we're locating a space in which the internal comes out, that this is done with transitional objects and a willingness to play.
Right.
And then what we find in this book is a woman who is caught up in complete internality.
Right.
And an author who has made a novel
right.
that consists of a series of attempts to help her
right.
break it. And the reader is addressed repeatedly by the author
right.
because the character can't quite make an address
right.
yet. This is how this novel works. She can describe her circle, but she can't get out of it. Only the author can help her break it. And that's what seems to me to be the formal invention here, that there's a series of circles
right.
and that the narrator and the reader are linking these separate circular stories to one another in forms of repetition, in forms of ironic playfulness. Mm-hmm. Am I getting it right?
Yeah, that's a brilliant way to describe it. Thank you. I think you're absolutely right. I love Winnicott and that the theory of the transitional spaces is a really important idea to me. The idea of a space of play, and yes, I think that the play that's occurring is a play between the author and the reader, and yeah, there's this attempt to help Mona, to help Mara too in the first part of the book. When I wrote Mara initially, she seemed so desolate to me that I felt like I had to give her something, and that's when I gave her Manuel and gave her film and music and as a place of escape. And for Mona, much later, I felt like I had to do that as well, that I had to offer her a lifeline.
Now, Winnicott says that our lives are transected by transitional objects, the first usually being the breast,
mm-hmm.
and the question of who does the breast belong to, mommy or baby,
mm-hmm.
and that we're playing a game of ownership in that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your character Mona has one of the most bizarre transitional objects I can think of
oh.
in modern literature. She has, you can say
I've forgotten this, her father's ashes.
Which she carries with her.
Yeah.
Introducing yeah. people to them. I would like you to meet my father.
Yeah.
And in fact, it feels in a certain way like the first transitional object she's had.
Right.
Really. There are dogs and cats that appear, but they appear and disappear.
Mm-hmm.
This is hers.
And it's hers to give away, which in the end she's able to do after a lot of work. But yeah, you're right. I hadn't thought of that. But that is her transitional object. Her baby blanket is her father's ashes.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing
yeah.
because she has to get out of that circle of life and death because they're not her lives
mm-hmm.
or her deaths.
Mm-hmm.
And she has to give them away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she even has to, what do we do when we can't solve a mystery? Well, we hire a detective. Significantly,
yeah.
this detective only appears on 1.5 pages.
Yeah, she tries really hard, Mona. Yeah, she's working hard.
But she does. She
mm-hmm.
does break through.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while I know that a novel is not therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel that the reader of this novel
mm-hmm.
is brought through a certain version of a fairly specific process,
mm-hmm.
psychoanalytic process,
mm-hmm.
that in this novel, that joining of form and content
mm-hmm.
also joins with a certain kind of psychoanalysis.
Mm-hmm.
That involves turning stories into play
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. making a terror story into a fairy tale and vice versa.
Right.
And I wondered about that kind of working. That's another reason why it seemed like the novel would be very difficult to write, because you're not writing about yourself, and yet you're writing about a universal process.
Right. Well, I have a therapist right now myself who's been a great help to me in the last few years, more than a few years, and I've been very involved in that process myself. So at some level, it had to inform what I was doing. I, of course, didn't set out to write the book in that way. I wasn't, you know, I don't do any plotting before. I think it's probably clear that I don't do much plotting beforehand. Things come up for me in the writing of a book, and then I revise. I do a lot of revision to make things work. And I think that process has been such an important part of my life that it came through in the book, in the work, that search for identity, that specific kind of a search for identity.
Well, in that way, one of the things that fascinates me about this book is the use of a certain kind of incantation.
Mm-hmm.
On the inside, in our internal life, mm-hmm. incantation may have its root in hearing the mother's heart. You know, mm-hmm. we grow up with a persistent rhythm.
Right.
Eventually, the incantatory, if it's going to succeed outside of a fugue state,
mm-hmm.
it's going to have to be heard. It's going to have to be externalized as poetry or song. In other words, this character is going to break into art.
Mm-hmm.
That is, we discover that she's going to write and write for someone.
Right.
For her brother, because
right.
her brother has believed yet another lie.
Right.
That their father was a writer.
Right.
Not true, and, you know, the thrill and pain of this book is that as we read it, we know what's not true, and
right.
we watch the characters being dominated by other people's stories of their lives.
Right.
And so here she goes. She
right.
has had nothing, and we discover that the person, in a sense, who's been trying to help Mona out of her internal circle
mm-hmm.
is Mona herself writing her book.
Right, right, yeah.
That this is the mysterious voice we've been hearing that's been telling us, if you don't like sex, skip this chapter.
Yeah.
And that finally has constructed section one in which
right.
something like a realistic version of what might have happened to the
right.
mother is told.
Right.
So that in the beginning is the end. And it seems that that is psychoanalysis, too. At
right.
a certain point, there is a voice that says, do we have to go back to go forward? The question always that a patient asks in the course of an analysis.
Right.
How far back is the beginning? And do I really have to go past my own beginning
right.
to move forward myself?
Right.
So that healing property becomes part of the formal aspect, I think, of the work.
Right. And there's a chapter heading, must we always go back? And Mona asks herself that question. Does she have to go back? Why does it seem so important to her to tell her parents' story? Does she have to go through the pain of doing that? But I think, you know, in the beginning of our discussion, I told you that I'd written the Mona section first and the Mara section second. And you're right. There was some sense in me as I was finishing the Mona section that I did have to give her the background and that power over that background, over being able to look at the real lives that her parents may have lived in a real Mexico City in the 1960s, as opposed to this fictionalized fairy tale little town in Mexico that we've all seen so often.
With sugar cookies. And right. Now, I wanted to ask you, because in this book, mm-hmm. the make-believe father, or the person who has assumed the role of father, mm-hmm. is a baker.
Yeah.
And sugar is his form of communication. Mm-hmm. And it's almost as if he's identified with the fairy tales, with the sweetened story.
Right.
And these characters are fighting against right. being fed by constant sugar.
Right. She won't eat his treats. She spits them out when he gives them to her. I love him. He's such a kind man, but he can't help but tell lies himself, because he can't look at the truth either. And Mona is angry at him because of it.
I wanted to ask a final question.
Yeah.
Throughout this book, and implicit in what we're talking about, is the idea that people use fictions to imprison and seduce others, and that a very different kind of fiction, maybe we would call it experimental fiction, mm-hmm. is there to break the spell or to work against the seduction. Mm-hmm. And I wondered, at what point can fiction do that? Because it seems that that's what you're striving for in this book.
I think that in my thinking of it, fiction can do that when it's a fiction that respects the reader, that respects the reader's ability to read complexly, and I guess that's what I meant when I said that my writing is for the reader first. It's the relationship between me and the reader, and in that honoring of that relationship, in asking for an active participatory reader, I think that fiction becomes liberating, because it's asking for an enactment from the outside.
I've been speaking with Veronica Gonzalez, author most recently of Twin Time, or How Death Befell Me, published by Semia Text. Thank you, Veronica, for coming and talking to me.
Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure.
My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. The technical director is J.C. Swadek, with production assistance from Alan Howard. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
Books can be funny too. Books make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme.
Now it's Book of the Mouse Club time. To the jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones from our website. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm. Plus, copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse.